I can make millions of people happy. And what an incredible opportunity that is. And so, you know, that's how I'm thinking about this. It's really about building something great, building something for the fans. I'm not in this to be mediocre. You know, that's just not my thing. You know, I want something great. And I know the fans want something great. And so that's my goal, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be an owner who builds a team that has continued success. We want to create a blueprint for winning. We will hire great baseball people like Sandy Alderson. Sandy and I share the same philosophy. We want to find great players and make them better.
That's what excited me, was the opportunity to come back and work with a guy like Steve, whose vision parallels my own.
We're going to strengthen our farm system, keep our players healthy, and use the best analytics. We're going to build a process that produces great teams year in and year out. We want to win now, but we're also building for the long term.
What's important to me is not having a job, but having an opportunity to create something really special.
We want to be excellent in all areas of this game. That's going to require resources, and I'm fully committed to making that happen. I want to thank my fellow Met fans, the greatest fans in baseball. These are smart fans. They know what they're talking about. And if they're emotional, that means they care. I'd rather have emotional fans that are passionate than fans that don't care. Your support has been incredible. You want us to win the World Series, and so do I. New York fans have high expectations, and I want to exceed them. I want an exceptional team. I want a team that's built to be great every year. I don't just want to get into the playoffs. I want to win a championship. I'm all in. Let's go, Mets.
It's another edition of the Talkie Mets podcast here on this Friday, November the 13th, 2020. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Well, happy Friday the 13th. Come to you a couple of days earlier than normal, an exciting week of Mets baseball. Joining me on this edition of the Talking Mets podcast will be our friend Justin Toscano of The Record. Justin was here just a month ago to recap the 2020 Mets season, but he was so excited about the press conference just 72 hours ago or so that he said, hey, let me come back. And you'll hear from Justin as he and I had a great conversation about the festivities over at the virtual Citi Field. And that's the funniest part about the press conference on, what was it, Tuesday, that it looked like they were behind the backdrop at Citi Field, but both Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson were at whatever their offices, their homes, whatever. But anyway, hope everybody's doing well. Excited to be here. And I'll tell you what, I might have to retire because with the amount of good press that the Mets are getting over the last 3 days, it's nirvana. It's baseball nirvana. I've never seen the media gush over the Mets and be so optimistic. They're gushing over Steve Cohen. They're gushing over Sandy Alderson, which we knew was going to happen. The laugh out loud Mets is over. And, you know, look at it. The Yankees are the ones getting the bad press because their minor league affiliates trashed them on the way out about how badly they are treated working with the Yankees. So it's a new world, and all I can say is enjoy it, because there hasn't been many days like that in Mets history. Maybe winning think about it, since they won the championship in 1986, how many like nirvana days has there been in Mets history? What, 2000 after they won the pennant, 2006 when they won the division maybe, and then they beat the Dodgers. Since 2007, not much. And this has been and I'll get to that in a minute, because I think since 2007, this has been a 13-year slog to the Steve Cohen era, really, when you think about it. But 2015, when they won the pennant. So there hasn't been that many days, and it's been almost like a yoke around the organization's neck. Now, you really can't lose a press conference. I've said this before. We talked about this with Beltran and Brody Van Wagenen and Mickey Callaway. But you could come up with a draw. You could be coming up, leaving people wanting. And I think at times that has been the case, even in most recent years, with Mickey Callaway or Beltran or, Brody, I thought, did a good job. But, you know, obviously there's always been that skepticism because of the ownership group. And that's gone. Now, I'm not one to gush because, everything has to be, I guess the old saying is, if it's too good to be true, it usually isn't. And I know that's a skeptical, cynical way of looking at things, but everything has a middle ground. Everything kind of finds its, down the middle, balanced situation. So the thing I'll say about this, Cohen and Alderson, what I think, and I said this on Twitter, what I think went most well with them is they were themselves. At least I believe they were themselves. I'm pretty good at sniffing out a phony meter. Now, with Brody, he was very corporate. He was very salesy. That's who you hired. That's what made him good. Luis Rojas and Beltran, for a variety of different reasons, when you've seen them in recent years, new to the position and maybe were finding their feet. And you're also trying to be very careful, especially when you had an ownership group very paranoid about how they were perceived in the media. And a lot of that, I think, had to do where, for a variety of reasons, being burned over many, many years, worried about their name, especially since Madoff. I don't think the Wilpons wanted to be in public. I don't think they were comfortable because they knew no matter what they said, they'd be criticized. So you get this, paranoid situation that comes with it, and you've got a lot of that at press conference. So I think the bar was very low to jump over for both these individuals, but they were honest, and I think they were honest as can be. Now, the question will be, and maybe that's the flip side of all this, is are the fans listening? Because I didn't hear spending, like even use the term that Cohen used, like a drunken sailor. I didn't hear they're going to get everybody who they want. I mean, Sandy Alderson said, they're building a front office and they could compete, and Cohen put kind of this 3 to 5 year timeline, and he did it in a way, unlike Mikhail Prokhorov when he owned the Nets, who came in all, with all bluster, and what did he say at that time? Something like, if they don't win a championship in 3 years, I'll retire, or I'll, something really stupid. And it turned out to be a comical situation. And a lot of people, because he was in his own way being honest, but being goofy, loved it at the time. So the fact that they were very honest, are the fans listening? Because that, to me, is the key. The honeymoon will last a very short period of time. They've got to get to work. The offseason has started. And you can see the offseason is going to be slow because you're not seeing much. And at this time, in November 13th, you've usually, you have the qualifying offers, but you've started to see some rumors and some things intensifying. This could be a situation, and I mean this, that on Valentine's Day, or 10 days before the season starts, and I know with all the health situation going on across the country, who knows what start dates are going to be in sports in 2021. I still are in the camp that, it's all systems go, especially because the NBA is starting at Christmas. But be that as it may, I think you're going to see things develop very slowly over the course of the next few weeks. So they have some time. So they have to go out and get themselves a GM, president of baseball operations. That seems to be the first key. Now, what did we really, and I don't want to state the obvious because that's not why you came here. You saw what I saw. Steve Cohen really took the position, and I loved how he said it was his day job. And it almost like this is, it's not a hobby because it's a lot of work. It's not my day job because I got to go make money here at 0.72 with my hedge fund. But I'm doing this because I think this could be a really good public trust. And that's an overused common in sports because sports is so expensive that it's almost like one of these public trusts where it's a real commitment. And I think I do believe that. I mean, I think a guy who's worth $14 billion minority ownership could have scratched his itch as a fan. And it hit all the talking points, cited the Polo Grounds connection, how his wife and his wife's family go to almost every game, good for him. He didn't take the bait. The media tried to bait him on the Wilpons and tried to talk bad. That was to be an obvious thing, and he didn't take that. But he talked about the team being a public trust, and I thought about where the Mets are right now in their history in the context of looking at other organizations. And we always talk about the Yankees. They're never going to be the Yankees. Maybe 50 to 100 years from now, when I'm gone and dead, and whoever's doing something like this, and many of you might be dead too, depending on your age group. Hopefully you're all living long, but maybe we're talking about the, you know, Mets version of the Yankees 100 years from now, who've won 20 championships. I don't know. I that's not what we're here to talk about. But what the Mets really are at this point, and remind me very much so, and I've said this on the podcast before, that I think back to, I did a trip to Boston back in 2000, and I went to Fenway Park on a tour. It was a great tour. They went down. I went down to the field. You get to, you know, walk around the warning track and the Green Monster, and then they took you up to the press box, and they went through kind of like the curse, and they did all this thing with numbers on uniforms and retired numbers about, you know, why there's a curse, and at that point, whatever, 80-something years, whatever it may be, 86, whatever. And the fan base was so passionate. The city was so behind this team. They loved this team. They loved it as an outing, but they really waited for the roof to cave in on their heads. And then you go back to 2003 and Aaron Boone, and then, you know, down 3-0 in 2004, and when that whole thing clicked, and when you had that special group that was able to, with all the weight on their shoulders, do something historic, win a championship, and then it really, it just changed after that, and it became a completely different organization. And still to this day, I've seen some comparisons where the Red Sox are not necessarily like the Yankees, like the Dodgers, because they haven't had that sustained run. Yankees had a 20-year run where they're really good, making the playoffs. Red Sox have had those down points, you know, the collapse that they had in 2011, you know, finishing in last place under Bobby V, winning the championship the next year, then, you know, falling back and up and back, you know, so maybe they've been a little bit up and down. But the point is that at that point in 2000 and 2001, when right before John Henry came in and bought the team, this was almost like an undervalued asset as an organization. It had so much to offer. It was ready to explode and be great. But they were holding themselves back. The energy around the team was holding themselves back. You know, I don't know the details of the ownership situation, but I'm sure that played into it as well. And that's what you have here, because Sandy Alderson talked about it. You have a great core. You have a farm system that's strong, but at the very much lower levels. They need some investment around them. You know, certainly the area around Citi Field is prime, you know, when we get past this public health emergency, prime for development and to bring some real value to that community in the terms of entertainment and an experience that's connected to that ballpark, similar to what I've seen in places like Pittsburgh, where it's amazing that a city like Pittsburgh could have a better around the ballpark experience than New York. But this reminds me of the Red Sox. And realistically, forget about winning a title in 3 to 5 years, but in 3 to 5 years, I could see this fan base having the same kind of pilgrimage, the same kind of experience that Red Sox fans going to Fenway have built and created. Now, they become kind of a cliche now after 3 championships and 15, 20 years later. That becomes on the back half of everything. But very much this beaten-down fan base who has come close, has had some real heartbreaking defeats. That's what Steve Cohen can build here, is the New York version of what the Red Sox became. Now, Boston will, you know, is always going to be different than New York. I've always said I'm jealous about that whole situation. City's behind every team. There's no inter-city squabbles. There's no inter-family squabbles. And that will mean that this will be a little different, because believe me, if the Mets start to get too much good press and too much feel-good goes around them, whether it's earned or not, because right now, feel-good is all speculation. We have no proof that anything's going to change and be better other than the fact that the guy's got a fat wallet. You're going to start to see some hatred from not only the Yankees and across town, but there will be those in the media that will be ready to bring them down, because that's what the media does. They build you up to, you know, pull you down. You've seen that with the Cubs. The Cubs are the darlings of everybody. The Red Sox, you've seen that. The Astros. Do I need to go on? Go on and on and on. But that's where this situation at. It's a hungry fan base. It's a fan base that wants success. I think it'll be an incredible, when fans are allowed back into the ballpark, it'll be an incredible home field advantage because that weight has been lifted. And I said just a couple of minutes ago, since really 2007, and maybe you could even move it back to 2006 when Beltran struck out, the team was always post-86, the fan base, you know, Terry Pendleton, what happened with the worst team money can buy. There was always this paranoia, but it really heightened after 2006. And then it got uber crazy after the collapse in 2007 and got worse and worse and worse. What happened in 2006, the summer of love, I call it, and then that disappointing defeat to the Cardinals, and then the subsequent disappointments in 07 and 08 changed the franchise for the worst under Wilpon ownership, I believe, forever. And then Madoff came in and accelerated it. And even though you had 2015 and that was special and cool and everybody will always hold that in a special fan place in their heart, it never really completely wiped away this negative feeling, negative energy. It's almost like the organization has had a yoke around their neck that's been removed temporarily. So where do they go from here? And I think with Sandy Alderson, who I have to give a lot of credit, and we'll get to kind of, you know, where now we have some idea where I think we could talk about the direction that the organization's going to go. But Sandy Alderson showed you a different side to him. He wasn't the condescending, grumpy, lawyerly, GM that, you know, you dreaded those scrums with the media. Even early in his tenure, maybe not the first year or two, but even, you know, middle towards 2015, it was just like, Sandy, you're not telling me anything. You're acting like we're in a deposition. It was annoying at times. And then the humor sometimes really started to get to me. And the media loves that. Oh, they don't have an outfield. You know, it's like, I don't want to hear it. I heard some really good thought processes that I could chew on. And it gave me a real idea of what they're trying to do. And I think it's very clear. And I said this without even knowing what was going on. Sandy's not here to run the baseball operations. Everybody had this idea. Sandy's not a baseball guy. He never was. That's why he had J.P. Ricciardi and Di Podesta the first time and how he relied on Tommy Tanoy and his scouting department. Chad McDonald, I think he had it at one point. He's not a baseball guy. He's a process guy. He's a management guy. He wants to organize the thing, build the blueprint, and hire people and oversee the people that are going to build the house. Because he can't pick up a hammer and knows how to build the house. He just doesn't. And he had to do a lot of that his last tenure. And it's not that he doesn't completely know. He knows how to. He's been in baseball long enough. He knows how to navigate the thing. He knows it. And he certainly is a hardline negotiator. And yes, he did a great job with, you know, getting rid of Beltran and getting value and R.A. Dickey. Different markets back then, different ways of doing business. Both of those trades and what they got back would never happen in 2020. Honestly, they never would happen. The Mets would be lucky to get salary relief and maybe a low-level prospect for Beltran. And Dickey, they certainly wouldn't get the haul they got with Syndergaard and DiNarno. I don't know if they may be able to get one, but not both. So his methods, his style probably are going to be, not probably, were passed by his last tenure. He did get sick, and that's clearly going to play into it. But you saw a much different person. And you saw someone who seems to have the energy to start the process of building the blueprint. I'm not sure who they're going to bring in. Like I said, I had heard Michael Hill, and then that got confirmed by Andy Martino, the former Marlins president, GM. That's, you know, one name, fits a couple of boxes, you know, progressive from a background standpoint, you know, somebody that has experience. You heard what Cohen said. He wants someone who knows what they're doing. So they're not going to go out and get a first-timer. They're going to get someone who's had experience in the job. And, you know, the hope is between the extra money, the good core that they have, some of the lower-level prospects that they're really bullish on, you know, they're going to be able to fulfill the needs, which, and we'll get to this after the break, you know, solid core on the team on offense, needs to work on pitching and defense, needs to work on organizational depth. Those are those old scrap heap pickups, and they've already started to work on that even before Cohen was on board. And a manager that has a lot of potential, that probably will keep the job, and the things that he needs to work on are really between the lines. And if you're going to talk about things that someone could work on and improve realistically between the lines, managing a bullpen, mainly in my opinion, I'll sign up for that. So a lot to really be excited about. Owner that's a true fan, ready to spend, ready to hold people accountable, use the term, I'm not mediocre, can really be the transitional figure that the Red Sox, with Theo Epstein and the John Henry ownership group, had in 2003? Same situation, very similar. Sandy Alderson, transitional figure too, to build the blueprint to the next generation of, next era of Mets baseball, and then hand that off in 2 years to President GM and whatever, you know, the front office structure looks like, and feel good that his unfinished business, when he thought he was getting Moneyball with money back in 2010 and he didn't, his unfinished business became finished. And he could, you know, put really, you know, I've been critical of him, and I still believe at times media overrates him. But between his Oakland days, you know, his involvement in getting Billy Bean and Moneyball and, you know, coming back to the Mets. And when he's 72 years old. He has other better things to do. He even said it in the press conference. I don't want to die with my boots on here. He's putting himself out there because this could go bad and he can get criticized. And I think putting together the blueprint, having someone that could manage the whole situation, manage, not like a committee like the Wilpons had, but have people and be able to bring people together and manage and make sure everybody knows their role and have a decisive organization that works together, not a committee organization where anybody at any point could make a decision, is his strength. And I think we'll see that. And I think we'll see somebody who really, for a good 2 years, will put a lot of time and energy in the job. He's, you know, important in getting Cohen approved, the political appointment. But, you know, to me, the next big move will be who he could bring in, what kind of hire, and is that going to be the next? The Mets haven't had consistency with any kind of position other than Sandy. You know, there's been a lack of consistency with GMs who come in and come out. You know, you want someone who can be here a decade or 7 or 8 years. I know Omar was here a long time, but it didn't feel that long, and it felt chaotic, you know, much through the last portion of his tenure. It looks like he'd get fired at any point. Brody was here only a little bit of time. Sandy at the end was in and out. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk now. You know, we know what the narrative is here. Owner who's a fan, we want to build the same kind of experience and connection and love that we see in Boston. That's my take on it. You've got the guy that's an old Marine, that's a process-oriented guy that could build the blueprint and build the organization and oversee the philosophy and mindset and also what we're going to see out on the field. So what can we expect from the 2021 Mets on the field? Where are they going to go now? We got some inklings of what they're thinking about doing at the press conference. Let's take a quick break. When we return, I'm going to let you know what I think we're going to see and who I'd like to see in this organization, especially if you only have one big fish that you could grab. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
Trevor Bauer is a good guy. You should give him a call. What do you think of his personality, just in general? Not even talking about signing him. He's got a very strong personality. You like that kind of personality, Sandy?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Look,
me too.
I guess Matt Harvey's coming back.
Business, right?
What was that?
This is an entertainment business.
Damn right it is.
It's an extension of what you do. And so we've got to be open-minded about, you know, how players express themselves. And the thing that's interesting about Bauer is, you know, he brings along with him a lot of ideas,
yes,
a lot of routines, a sort of technical orientation that I bet we can learn from. So, you know, if a guy can perform, it doesn't really, to me, as long as it's not disruptive in the clubhouse, and basically if guys see someone performing, they'll live with whatever the baggage is. I actually think Bauer would be a great personality in
Bring
New
him
York.
In.
I think he's the kind of guy that fans would embrace.
Sandy, don't even wait to hire a GM. Sign Trevor Bauer. That's the move, man.
He's in Sarasota right now.
All right, we're back. In just a few minutes, we'll have Justin Toscano of The Record, and we'll get to the press conference and some of his thoughts about you know, where we see the Mets going very early into the process here. So the good news is, look, the good news keeps on coming. Press conference goes well. Ace the press conference. Everybody loves Sandy. After the press conference, he goes on WFAN with the new Carton and Roberts, you know, Craig Carton back there on The Fan in New York. And good interview, 30-minute interview that I highly recommend. And he talks up Trevor Bauer, which is pretty remarkable because I was like, that's not the name that, although I thought he was an intriguing name, I said I wasn't sure how Bauer would be in New York. Now, almost immediately thereafter, the next day, Marcus Stroman accepts the qualifying offer. Let me start there real quick. So Stroman, to me, yes, I've been critical of him. I was critical of his opt-out, not because he opted out. Look, he put his money where his mouth is. But I really don't believe COVID was the reason. Because if COVID was the reason, you know, there's enough reasons to say, why would I even play in 2021 based on some of the things you see with the public health situation across the country right now? You know, we could debate that till, you know, the cows come home. But that's not what this is about. So he opts back in. I do think it was a bit of a phony with the opt-out about why. I don't think he was healthy. I don't think the season was worth it for him. I think he was afraid of performing poorly. I think he was afraid of getting hurt. And he was thinking, well, let this season play out. Let me go out there, test the free agent waters, and I could get my deal, and I'll be in a better place and almost not playing because you could live off of your resume pre-2020 pandemic shortened season will be enough. It's not. But 40% of the revenue not potentially being available with a lot of uncertainty, with continued uncertainty about public gatherings. He looked at the $18.9 million qualifying offer and said, let me take this, just like Kevin Gausman, because pitchers are risky. And he's going to bet on himself. And that's the one thing I'll say. You know, Stroman in the Instagram stuff, and he's blocked me on Twitter, and I've never really criticized him all that much. I don't know why he's blocked me, but that I don't care. The Instagram stuff annoys me, but what I could say is he always puts himself out there. And he says, I'm betting on myself. And I have to respect that. So now you have a rotation with DeGrom. You have Stroman. You've got Peterson. You know, maybe Lugo, maybe Matz. I think you still have to improve it. So at least now, at some point, is Lugo, Matz, Peterson, do you move those 6, 7, 8? And how many arms can you get? Because I said to everybody, if you get Stroman, then you're going to go Stroman and maybe some higher-end veterans. John Lester, Charlie Morton, maybe Jake Arrieta. I'm just throwing names out there because you got to go into more nuance with this. But then I heard what Sandy Alderson said. And I'll start with what he said, what he thought about the team, because I said, now, that will determine if this Stroman move is just getting the rotation enhanced with another arm based on last year's arms, and this is what your rotation is going to be, or is it going to be, this is the beginning of something more. So Alderson talked about good offensive core and liking the offensive core. And after hearing that it's going to take three major leaguers to land Francisco Lindor, I just don't see a trade like that happening quick. I don't see that being in the best interest of this organization. I don't think an organization that has Sandy Alderson coming in, who admitted that he's not going to be making the baseball decisions, that has to hire a president of baseball operations, who's going to a GM/GM, who's going to come in and have to learn the organization. You're betting on another Jared Kelnick situation happening by jamming a trade into that scenario. And three major leaguers, and probably going to be at least two offensive players, ripping apart from a team that could be a top five offensive team is not a good idea. So I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not even going to get into this. I don't think the Francisco Lindor trade is a topic in conversation for today. It really isn't, because I don't think they're built to make the best, most educated trade with not just in the Lindor situation, with anybody, unless it's a very minor deal or a complete salary dump. This organization is being built on the fly in the middle of free agency, in the middle of the offseason, when everybody's got their plan already put out there. That adds a lot of complexities, and that means that I think you're going to see more scrap heap pickups, which Alderson said they need because they need organizational depth, free agency signings. That's how you're going to build this team. And then maybe as they get settled, as you get later into the offseason, maybe you could explore trades, but I don't see of the magnitude of Lindor being realistic. Now, when you look at solid offensive core, he said they need a catcher, no doubt. We've talked about that here. They need pitching, address some of that with Stroman. They need to improve the defense. That's a little trickier because that's more about maybe internally with Jimenez. That's about signing a catcher. That's more defensive oriented. And then you have to say, can you live with what you got in the outfield? Or maybe you bring in guys that could be your late inning defensive replacements, i.e., you know, Mariznick types and things like that, you know, org depth and whatnot. So if you look at what Cohen and then Alderson said, seeing what Alderson's focus is, what Cohen said about not signing, spending like a drunken sailor, I can't see there being more than one big move. Now, I know what you're saying. You know, you heard about Sandy saying it's about the acquisition now, not the cost. That's true. But cost is always going to play into that. Length of contract, risk, you know, not doing what, you know, you would sometimes see new owners do. Come in, spend all their money, go, you know, everything gets put into their first 12 to 24 months owning the team. Doesn't work out. Now they go the opposite way and completely pull back. You don't want that because now you're going back to the same problem you had with the Wilpons at sometimes, maybe on a more enhanced level, more on steroids, for lack of a better word. And that's not getting this organization anywhere closer to where they want to get. He mentioned Brad Hand and being able to go out and maybe saying Brad Hand is an overpay. But if it was a different time, listen to that, different time. It was before the closing of the organization and the transaction and the sale of, from the Wilpons, that they may have jumped on something like that. That's good to hear. But it tells you that you can't say out of the three big free agents that have been talked about with the Mets, George Springer, JT Realmuto, Trevor Bauer, I don't think you're going to be able to get more than one. Love to say two out of three, and it would be an easy. So if you told me two out of three, it's an easy one. As long as it's reasonable, go for Realmuto, go for Bauer. They fit two things, the current needs and needs that you're going to have for the foreseeable future. I don't care if it's the 2021 Mets, the 2025 Mets, strong defense behind the plate, strong defense up the middle, pitching. That's always going to be the case. It's never going to change. So when you look at those three free agents, George Springer, who has had the most cachet in the media, and I don't know if it's coming from, you know, I'm guessing it's coming from his camp, local guy from Connecticut, looking to make a change, looking to get big money, come to New York, maybe be in a bigger market. Very good player, you know, solid offensive player, top 10 outfielder, if you look at any metric. But I also think that Brandon Nimmo could be a top 10 outfielder. And I think Conforto could be a top 10 outfielder. You know, J.D. Davis has the potential offensively, at least, to be, if he plays the outfield, be a very good offensive outfielder, but he's probably going to profile more third. So, you know, there's some things there that make me wonder, is that where your money's best spent? Realmuto and Bauer, now you say, where would you go if you only had one option? Well, then I would go Bauer. And the reason I say that is you heard the comments coming into the segment from Sandy Alderson about Bauer and what he thinks about Bauer and the unorthodox methods that he's used that were criticized. And you could read about him at the weighted balls and the, you know, he doesn't exercise with some kind of whip type of device where, you know, instead of doing the traditional arm rolls and whatnot, he said a lot of things about what he believes about climate change, which drive people nuts. And I, you know, guess what? It's his opinion. And not everything he says is maybe popular because it's not a media narrative, but doesn't mean it's wrong. And at least he has a thought and an independent thought, and he's engaging with his audiences rather than saying, I'm just happy to be here. I know that that could annoy people, but I judge players between the lines. Unlike a lot of people, I judge players between the lines. So I throw that out. I do think that could become a distraction in the sense, not that he's thinking about it on the mound, but it could make his experience here not as enjoyable. And then it puts him in a situation where if he's not as successful as people want, nobody wants to come to work, not being liked by the media, not being liked by the fans, not performing, and obviously giving themselves less of a margin of error. So that's always something to look out for. But, you know, if a Sandy Alderson is comfortable, a guy who's very conservative in the sense of how he would go out and spend money and bring somebody in, if he didn't feel he's been here long enough to know the pitfalls of New York, I don't think he would say what he said or what you heard him say on the Carton and Roberts show. Now, Bauer had a tremendously big year. DeGrom, Gerrit Cole, Houston type year, which is a huge outlier compared to what you've seen from him in prior seasons, although his 2018 was pretty good. He's only made over 30 starts twice, and his real big start year was 2019, where he made 34 starts. That's when he was traded in between Cleveland and Cincinnati. He was really bad when he first went over to Cincinnati in 2019 after the trade. Mets actually lit him up late in the year in September on a Sunday afternoon. You guys might remember that. But when, you know, with transitioning to a new organization, midseason team, that's to be expected. Maybe you get some of that as a new free agent in New York and whatnot. But if he gives you what he historically can give you, which is, you know, 13 to 15 wins, 200 innings, almost 10 strikeouts, a strikeout per nine, ERA plus of about 115. And I think that's low for what, you know, the kind of money he made command coming off of his Cy Young year. But anyway, he's a number two or a 1A, depending on how high his ceiling really is. Is the ceiling what we saw in 2020, or is he more somewhere between 2018 and 2020, where, you know, he's been Cy Young / very good? I mean, he's pretty much, if he stayed in Cleveland in 2018 and didn't get hurt, if he didn't get hurt in 2018, I think he would have won the Cy Young, would have had a good shot. If he stayed in Cleveland in 2019, he wouldn't have won the Cy Young, but he was very good. So you only have one period here where he's been a little bit less than, a number two since 2017, 2018, and thereabouts. That's the guy you invest in if you only have one shot. They need pitching. DeGrom is, you know, you hope that he's going to continue at his excellent rate, but he may drop off a little bit. So you need to improve what's behind him. Stroman slides in as a number three, which I think is perfect for him. Now Peterson's your number five. Or maybe it's Lugo and Matt's fighting that out, depending on what you think of Lugo. Lugo's the kind of the key. Now, if you bring in, and that's really the decision you have to make, I don't think you want to hand Lugo a spot. You want to make him earn a spot. But if you bring in a Charlie Morton then with the Bauer, and I didn't think the Mets, once they signed Stroman, would be able to do that. Maybe they'd have to dial it back to a different type of veteran and maybe make that veteran, like I said, has a better floor than a Michael Wacha, who's been injured. I hate to use the word Rick Porcello because you guys are going to roll, but maybe that's what you do if you sign a Bauer. Bring back a Porcello. He has to compete with, not that he'll, you know, have a depending on the kind of contract, but I think his contract would be reasonable because of the year he's coming off. He'd probably have to earn a spot. You have him compete with Peterson and Matz and what have you, because you still have Noah Syndergaard that's going to be hopefully back, and you've got some positives from that on the horizon. So, look, that's where I think this team should go. Forget Lindor. Forget trades. Too complicated. Not the right time. Risky. Mistake going to be made. Love JT Realmuto. He is a catcher. There is going to be some sunk cost at the end. But if you told me you only have JT Realmuto or Bauer, I love JT Realmuto and Bauer would be together, would be Nirvana. Perfect. That's not going to happen. It would be Bauer number one, Realmuto number two, and then Springer. Look, nothing against Springer. That's just not a need. The offense, you heard it in the press conference, is good. He profiles more as a corner as he gets into his mid-30s. They don't need another corner. They've got that. They've got Nimmo in one corner. They got Conforto in another. With, you know, McNeil, who the heck knows where he's going to play? It's going to be all around the field. So I put him as even in the outfield too. J.D. Davis, there's a lot there. Bauer's the guy. And the fact that Sandy brought him up in that sense tells me he's making eyes at him, and I think they're going to make a serious run, and that would really change this rotation. And if by October, I'll leave you with this, and then we'll get to Justin Toscano. If by October you have DeGrom, Bauer, Stroman, Syndergaard, number five, which you're not even going to use a number five in October, well, wow. Now you went back to the same exciting rotation that you had when you had Wheeler, when you had a healthy Syndergaard, and you don't have the long-term, you know, I don't know what Bauer's contract will be. I don't think it'll be a seven-year deal. I wonder if it's realistic to think, and he's talked about wanting to sign shorter-term deals. You don't have the risk with what the Wheeler contract would have had. And if you told me in the next 3-4 years, who would you rather have, Wheeler or Bauer? It's no contest, it's Bauer. Wheeler is an injury risk. He is. Good pitcher, overrated. Don't want to get back into that. Would love to have him, but not at the price that the Phillies gave. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When I return, you'll hear from Justin Toscano of The Record. Justin, one of the favorites of this show, was at the press conference, virtual press conference on Tuesday. Let's get his reaction to Sandy Alderson and Steve Cohen. What does he think the Mets will do this offseason? Oh, by the way, We're going to get into Luis Rojas. I didn't really talk much about Luis Rojas, but we'll get into that as well right after this. The Talking Mets podcast is available on many outlets, but the most popular is Apple Podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Silva, the host of the Talking Mets podcast, and I encourage you to leave a review about the program on Apple. Just rate it 1 to 5 stars, hopefully a 5 because why wouldn't you? And then if you have time, leave a review. It helps the podcast continue to grow and encourages others to take a listen. You can also email me at MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Hope to hear from you soon. And enjoy the rest of the show. We're back, and I'm joined by our friend. You know, he was just here. He decided to make a little return post-press conference. Justin Toscano of The Record, Justin C. Toscano on Twitter. And Justin, a month ago, we didn't know where anything was going to be going. And Sandy Alderson gets hired. They finally closed the Steve Cohen deal. And here's what I would say. You can't really lose a press conference. It's really, look, if you lose a press conference, that's a really bad start. That's a bad start. You don't always win it, but here's what I'll say. They won the press conference. I thought both Sandy showed me a side I didn't see his first round. I know you weren't here, but, you know, you've heard a little bit about Sandy round one. Steve Cohen, an owner, you don't know what to expect, seemed to come across sincere in the fandom. It didn't seem hokey or rehearsed. Is this too good to be true? Because all I see for the last 48 hours, great Mets news, great Mets coverage. I got nothing to complain about. I can't accuse the media of doing anything nefarious. I got nothing to complain about here. So, you know, maybe I can retire now and say it's Nirvana in Mets land. So give me your take. You were there live. You saw the it up front. What were your thoughts?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on again. It's always, you know, it's always fun to be on with you and talk Mets. The too good to be true, if you're dreaming of World Series titles every year and that's going to be your standard, yes, it would be too good to be true. But I think from the perspective of a lot of these Mets fans, what they wanted was not only somebody who was going to let the baseball people do the baseball things after all the past reports about Wilpon meddling, be it what you will, whatever your opinion may be, but more so, I think they like Cohen because he is – one of them. And like you said, the biggest thing was that he came off genuine. He did not play it up to be too cheesy. He said, look, I relate to them. Look, I'm going to hold myself accountable to these goals. And you know what? It takes a lot of guts to say it would be disappointing if you didn't win one within 3 to 5 years and maybe sooner. You see so many of these press conferences where owners and other executives will try to just beat around the bush and give you these nice buzzwords. Don't get me wrong. There were plenty of buzzwords and juicy quotes in that press conference, but I thought Sandy Alderson and Steve Cohen really gave a few direct goals of what they wanted to do and kind of how they wanted to achieve those. And in terms of too good to be true, I don't think so just yet, because I think this is really a new era of Mets baseball, and Steve Cohen with his resources, we'll see how, you know, how he divvies that up, you know, per se, between the on-field talent, the organizational infrastructure, be it what you may, whatnot. But I think it really is a new era, and Mets fans have an owner that at least right now they like and can be proud of, somebody who wants to build a sustainable contender. You know what? I think it would be too good to be true if Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson went out and only talked about shopping in the gourmet aisle. But no, I think they're really – for me, if I were a fan, the really encouraging thing would be that I heard a lot more about building a sustainable winner than just building, you know, spending like a drunken sailor.
All right. And it's interesting because I think it kind of got lost, but Noah Syndergaard, I think when the deal went down about a week ago, had made this kind of odd comment on Twitter about not being a commodity anymore. And one of the things you guys have seen just following Steve Cohen on Twitter is that reached out to Marcus Stroman right after he signed on, tweeted today. And again, you know, the Twitter romance, you better watch out. I was talking to a former Met about a week ago. And I said to him, you know, this is a honeymoon. He goes, you know, I'm looking at it too. And I hope he remembers that this is not going to be like this all the time. But the point is he's interacting with the players. It seems to be a personal touch. There's this thing called energy, and in an age of analytics, we forget that there might have been this cloud over the team, the ownership situation, the yolk around the neck from the constant negativity about the ownership situation,
Obviously, you have to cover the team, but it's very easy for clicks and for a media perspective to go negative. That's what sells. And now it's almost like this weight has been lifted. You can see, you know, hearing Sandy talk about agents, you know, calling him. So it'll be interesting if just that component, the money is the crux, but that component of a different voice elevates everybody to kind of enjoy going to work again. The Syndergaard comment about not liking being treated like commodity was a very interesting comment, because I felt that was what Brody Van Wagenen was all about, at least my impression on the outside. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. It's been interesting to see Steve Cohen comment on Twitter. Now you take the level out and you say, when things start to go bad, is it going to stay like that? Which way is it going to balance? And I think it's going to be, you know, he might not be on Twitter as much when, you know, team hits a 10 game losing streak, possibly in June or July. But you know what? This is a guy who's run successful businesses. He has been in the heat of it. Even if you look at the investigation that was done, he was never, you know, indicted. He was never charged, but personally, but he's dealt with a lot of these situations that are far bigger than baseball, I think. And I tend to believe him when he says that he's going to be around when the fire hits or when the shit hits the fan, per se. But I think it's interesting, the idea of kind of the cloud over the organization, because as a player, and I don't know this, I mean, nobody has ever said this explicitly to me, at least in these words. But I would think as a player, it's got to be pretty darn tough to stay focused and do your job at times when the organization is constantly tripping over itself. And that goes at the top. And it's not even in the clubhouse, not even things players are doing. But I would think it's got to be tough when it's like, oh, we just beat the Phillies 5-2. But here was what happened before the game. And that's what really everybody's really talking about for the next week, you know? And I think from a point of being fun to go to work and whatnot, this change can bring a lot of good, especially because Steve Cohen has shown that he's willing to reach out to these players, shown that he's at least, you know, through Twitter, willing to maybe treat them as human beings rather than commodities, as Syndergaard said. And then Syndergaard also had that gif that he tweeted of, you know, somebody running through a brick wall. So it seems Steve Cohen's getting a lot of positive reviews. And I'm, like I said, I'm excited to see not only what he can do to make the fan experience better, because I think that's big, is bringing value to fans, most of whom aren't the richest in the world, you know, and they want their experience to be better. But how is he going to make the organizational infrastructure better, provide resources to players and employees? And it's really a new era. And I think change is, in this instance, is good.
I was thinking of like where the Mets are in context of baseball history. And, right. You know, the Red Sox comparison may not be perfect. Now, I said this in another podcast, I was always jealous of Boston. Everybody rooted for the same teams. Everybody was in it together. There seemed to be a real community, big town, but a small community. And here right. In New York, we're always fighting internally. Jets, Giants, now Knicks, Nets, Yankees, Mets. And I always feel like somebody's always rooting against me in my home. And with the Met fan base, though, I thought of the Red Sox post, right before Theo took over, maybe 2001, 2002, you know, Duquette came in, did some nice things, but then they made the change. And I think this situation is similar. Now, it hasn't been 86 years, but it's been a long time. Now, there's been a couple of World Series, a lot of heartbreak. But think about the Red Sox fan. Forget the Cubs. That was a whole different situation. Think of the Red Sox fan 20 years ago. Very much like the Mets fan. Very much waiting for the roof to cave in. Waiting for the football to get thrown away from them. Like Lucy and the Charlie Brown and the football. So I'm wondering if this is the next, you know, kind of, I don't want to say lovable losers, but maybe you'll have actually the public get behind this. In a way, I don't know. It's interesting because the Mets is going to be a big market team. And I don't think people love New York, but I thought of the Red Sox like around 2000, 2001 when I was thinking about the Mets and their situation.
It is interesting. And I think you might be hated even more around your own town, just because I think you're going to see it, man, as they get better over the next couple of years, you're going to hear a lot of insecure Yankee fans out there that even though they have their rings and they've won them, you know, more recently, I mean, I think people know that there's going to be a change. And I like that. I like that Boston comparison. I never thought of that myself, but I think this is the point of change where you say that, okay, now they've got some structure, right? Like Jeff Wilpon would lead the baseball operations team effectively, but now you've got Sandy Alderson. He's going to hire a president of baseball operations who, you know, then you would assume is going to hire a general manager and they'll go out from there. So you've got a new structure. And I think the new structure fits the modern day game better than their old one, certainly. And when you talk about Cohen's resources and what he can do, you know, beefing up the analytics staff and things like that, he mentioned his words that he liked the way the Dodgers did things. And I think that sustainable contender is something that is interesting to me because Cohen said himself, I don't want to be good once every 3 years, you know, 3 years and then be bad for 3 to 5 years. You know, he's like, I want to be good every year, want to be contending every year. That's always the goal for everybody. Everyone's going to say that. But I think this is the point of change. This is the point where you see the thoughtfulness. I think the most important point that they emphasized to me was that, okay, we're not going to give you guys a budget today. We don't have that figure yet. But right. Steve Cohen said, I can promise you this. We're going to act like a major market team because we are a major market team. But are we going to act like drunken sailors? No. And I think the heavy emphasis on that, and instead of going one way or the other, was the most encouraging thing to me that signified, okay, maybe this team can be the one that finally kicks the door in and breaks the door down on being one of these top tier teams that is in a big market. Because like Sandy said, it's tough to build these sustainable contenders if you're not in a big market. It's just the way the game's set up. It's tough. And I think the Mets have a real opportunity here.
Sandy Alderson was much different his first tenure. Like I had said earlier, you know, we were talking before the broadcast, you know, covered him in person a couple of times, you know, smart guy, you know, could have been a little condescending. The humor got on people's nerves, you know, very methodical. It was a much different budget, obviously a much different situation. But what you saw the other day was a way different person. Obviously healthy, thank God, healthy, you know, seems to be the cancer, and that's a great thing. But he wasn't stiff. He was less relaxed. He wasn't, you know, answering with condescending remarks. He had a lot of good things to say. And you know, one of the interesting things I thought he said when he looked at the team, strong farm system. Maybe that's Brody Van Wagenen's legacy is the last two drafts. You know, think about it. 5 years from now, maybe we're talking about, hey, Brody did this bad, Kelnick, which we got to get over Kelnick, but Brody did this good, and we got this, this, and this out of that. You know, it looks like they like the core of the team, which I think the core of the team, especially offensively, is something to really, you know, hold on to. And it looks like it's about, hey, I got something here. It's not 2010 when I was coming into a rebuild with no money. Yeah. There's a lot there. So, you know, I think you saw a revitalized or rejuvenated Sandy Alderson that wasn't walking into his office like the last time thinking he was getting one job, got another, and then went, that you saw like, hey, I could really do this. Like that's my perception. And I know you weren't around 8 years ago, but I'm sure you heard the stories.
He was loose, relaxed. And honestly, he looked happy to be there. He looked relatively stress-free. Now the job is not going to be stress-free, but he looked loose and he looked calm. And I think one of the things is that I think he feels inside maybe more comfortable with Cohen's vision, and especially how, again, Cohen's resources might allow he and the people below him might make their jobs easier. And I think when you lead a rebuild, especially in the time he did, 2010, you know, those couple of years after, look, you've got very little margin for error, especially with the Wilpon budget. That's not an easy gig, but I think that he had energy Tuesday. He was speaking. He gave great examples. He had the one about the ad campaign on the Manhattan bus stops. He had the quote that I thought was noble of him was when he was breaking down the team, which was one of my favorite answers, when he was breaking down the team and he said, well, you know, we can get better defensively. And some of that's on me because of the heavy offensive focus that we had. And I thought that was very, very noble to take accountability for that. And when you look at it, you discuss the core. I think he feels just a lot better about the situation he's coming into, right? It's obvious. And then obviously with, you know, he said that he's committed to a couple years, see where it goes from there, but he doesn't have to make the baseball decisions. And that's something he is fine with. And he said that. He's like, I don't want to be making the baseball decisions. I want to sit at the table. I don't want to be the head of the table. And I think he is much more comfortable with kind of what he and Steve Cohen align with vision wise than, you know, that's tough. You gotta come in, you gotta rebuild. Of course, you're gonna be ready for the challenge if you interview for and get that job. But it's I think it's a much more stable situation, thanks in part to himself, for the core that he helped build. But also, yeah, I think when you look at Brody 3 to 5 years down the line, and it might even be more than that, because sometimes prospects take a while, things take a while, trades take a while, these guys get used as trade chips. It's going to be tougher to evaluate, but look, I've defended a couple of the Brody moves, and I've not even defended them as much as just saying, okay, I knew where he was coming from and trying to go big and win now. It didn't work, but I think when you look at it, that was tough to be aggressive in consecutive drafts. I mean, the signability with these guys, especially these days coming out of college with so many options and injuries and things like that, signability is no guarantee. And I think that's where you really saw his agent come out a little bit is in getting those guys. And I think you look at that as one of the reasons that Sandy might be walking into a more stable situation. Now, he did say that they're thin, you know, double in triple A, but it's the lower minors right now. I mean, look really good. And I think you'd agree.
Yep, I agree with that. Justin Toscano, the record, joining me here. When you look and move to the team, so here's some takeaways I got. First thing, Luis Rojas, what was very positive, and I don't know if it was during the press conference or maybe I was listening to him after with Gelbs, but he talked about Rojas and he talked about how he thinks he's got the personality and the people part of the job down, but needs to work in between the lines. And I agree. I thought his bullpen management was during the year. I'm a big critic of bullpen management, though. I'm a great Stratomatic manager. I got to tell you, I can manage Stratomatic. I could give a class. And now, again, those guys aren't warming up, so it's pretty easy for me. But anyway, you know, the fact that he could manage the media, he could manage his boss, Rojas, he could run a clubhouse. You can't really teach those things. They're instinctual. I think if you're telling me your manager needs to work on the between the line stuff, there's very little that you can't get better. I think that's where you can improve most easily. And I think that other than bullpen, between the lines, there's not much you can screw up. I mean, the bullpen's it. That's the game right now. So that's very positive. And I'd be careful. I know he wants to give the next guy, his president of baseball operations, his GM, a chance to hire somebody. And I know fans, you know, some have thrown out Buck Showalter and why can't we go and get an experienced manager? You might have somebody here. So I thought that was an interesting comment.
And I thought it was interesting just how candid they were about the whole situation, right? Is that he was willing to say, okay, look, I've told Luis that it's very likely he'll be the manager, but obviously, you know, the caveat that the new person is going to have some say in that. I would agree with you though. Even fans are tossing around Carlos Beltran. I mean, it's almost in today, I know there are flashy names and proven managers out there, but this guy paid his dues, man. And that's what I always try to tell people is he sat, not only was he, you know, with his dad, he grew up in the game. He sat through minor league season after minor league season in this very organization. And then mind you, after he would manage those minor league seasons, he would go to the Dominican Republic and manage in the winter league to refine his skills. And I think this guy, like you said, I am very big on, you've got so many assistant coaches around you, and then so much support staff that the in-game managing, you know, a lot of those decisions are organizational now. And so what you need to have is the tact in the clubhouse and with players. And I have no doubt that the Mets, you know, the players aren't lying when they say they would run through a brick wall for him, which was the exact quote I think Dom Smith used on that last day or the second to last day of the season, the regular season here in 2020. Because look, it's the people side of the game that you have all these analytics these days. You have all these ways players are being measured with social media. It's never been harder for them to just focus on only doing their job. And you need a people guy, man. And I think the way he runs the clubhouse, the way he manages players, the way the way he was able to sit Amed Rosario, to sit Pete Alonso in favor of the hot hands and have those guys still be bought in, that really speaks to the type of the guy that they think he is and how much he's respected. And I would, like you, man, I would be cautious about, you know, if I were the new guy, the new hire, about going away from him. I think Luis Rojas, and I've always said this, has a very bright future managing.
Beware of shiny objects. I tell that to people all the time. And that's a big thing, because you said earlier, you know, they're not going to spend like drunken sailors. Now, Stroman takes the qualifying offer. Not
interesting.
It was a conversation. I was talking to some former players. I'm like, I know it's been a while since you played. I said, if I'm looking at $19 million on this economy, and I think the players are realizing there's a lot of uncertainty. 40%, I keep telling people, if you're going to have 40% of your revenue, if that's the number of fans in the stands, best case scenario, forget politics, forget vaccines, but best case scenario, let's be honest, you're not going to have full attendance April 1st, even if you are completely safe. Everything is safe. No matter who's in office, completely safe. People are going to be like, let me be careful. That's human nature. So you have to prepare for an attendance drop. And with that, knowing that there is going to be some uncertainty with the payroll and whatnot, they may only have one other big move. So I hear George Springer, good player, not sure that's the need. JT Realmuto, catcher, comes with some drawback. Now, Sandy's eyes at Trevor Bauer, which shocked me completely. I have to tell you, the most shocking thing, because I think Bauer, I don't know if you've read the MVP Machine, that book is a great book by Lindbergh. And great, great book, and Bauer's a lot in it. I know he says a lot of things that tick people off, but you know what? That's not what I'm worried about on the field. Good pitcher, 1A to DeGrom, you know, might be in a different arc than DeGrom. I think that's where I'd go for the big fish. I'd go Bauer, then maybe figure out the defense behind the plate and the depth and all the other things that he talked about. Where would Justin Toscano go? Are you on board with that? Only one. Is it Bauer? And it's not an easy answer, because all three that I just laid out to you come with drawbacks.
If I were to pick one, here's how I'd analyze them. So George Springer, I love watching the guy play. As a baseball fan, I love watching him play. That's not the top need, though. So, I mean, I'm throwing him out just based on that, because that they can get better defensively in center field without going George Springer. And then, man, in the division, I love watching Realmuto. I think he's the real deal. I mean, I think he's great. But with what he's going to demand and maybe what you're going to have to eat at the back half of that, I think is what you've made that point a lot just with catchers and aging, and it's a real thing. Even though he is a superstar, I'm going Bauer too. And I'll tell you this. I really don't know what other players think of him. And obviously with a personality like that, some are going to be for you, some are going to be against you. But I think the main deal is this. You can talk you can talk all you want. If you're out there posting a sub-3 ERA or whatever, who's going to care? And I think if you look at the modern-day game, look at the Nationals last year, look at the Dodgers this year. Both of those teams had such a big advantage just by virtue of having at least two good starters to where they wouldn't have to throw many bullpen games in the postseason. And so you look at Scherzer, Strasburg. I mean, if you had DeGrom, Bauer, Stroman, and that's not even counting what Syndergaard could be, you know, whenever he returns. I think that's tough to bet against in a postseason series. And I mean, I always look at it like this, that I think the Mets right now, offensively, I'm not worried. I know what happened this year. I wouldn't be worried about them at the plate. So I think if you can put together.
I don't think they realize how good offensively. I know the runs don't match up, but all the advanced metrics, go to Fangraph, all the advanced metrics. That team could score runs, 5 runs a game. That's just as of right now with no changes. Clunky defense, they lost because of pitching. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's a point that people say, oh, they need a center fielder. Well, they really don't. They really don't if they really want to talk about it. And you could argue that Nimmo's better than Springer. I know that that's, you know, a debate that has nuance to it, but, you know, that's right.
Yeah, no, but that's where I'm going. And sorry to ramble, but I think if you look at the main need, pitching, You look at who's the top free agent on the market, where you go Bauer, Realmuto. Okay, well, you need pitching. And especially if you're going to hope to win these playoff series, in a normal year, you need starting pitching. And I think that gives you the best chance to do it because, look, I'm not concerned about the offense. And with what they showed with a couple of the lineups last year, they've shown they can be good defensively for a pitcher like Marcus Stroman if they put Jimenez and Yorman there, whatever it may be. They've shown they can get a little better defensively based on the lineup. Thank the DH for part of that. I'm going Bauer, man. I honestly like the guy. Like, I think baseball needs some personality, but I'm always the guy. Like, if I were playing with him or against him, I don't care if you talk your talk. You know, if you're going out there shoving, who can tell you otherwise, you know?
You get good conversations on climate change, good conversations on all this stuff. Listen, you're gonna have a chock full of stuff to talk about. It'd be great, you know? Get yourself on Twitter with Trevor Bauer. Who knows? As he comes to New York, and that's the thing, as he comes to New York, does he tone some of that down? You want someone to be who they are, and you hope that other stuff, whether you believe it or not, whatever it is, I think we can put it at the side between the lines and what have you. So it'll be interesting nonetheless. So
they call him a head case, some people, but it's like, where do we draw the line, right? Between saying like somebody's a head case and they're just their personality is different than your average baseball player. I mean,
and then you can't criticize the guy for being bombastic or out there when you can give the bland quote, well, I'm just happy to be here. You know, you can't have it both ways. And when you peel the onion, I think if we learned what a lot of our sports heroes thought, sometimes you'd be like, I wish I didn't know that. So sometimes keep the package, but you know, there's a trade-off on all that. So,
right.
So what do you got coming up? I know that you're going to be on a bunch of podcasts. I know you got some, you're going to be doing the rounds after this. So you got other podcasts to go on. I'm assuming that we'll have other press conferences virtually at Citi Field, or what we'll pretend to be. We all know Sandy was at his house because I heard the door swinging behind him or something like that. It's interesting how that works out. But what do you got? What does Justin have working out for the next few weeks?
So just this front office search, man. I think we'll have a lot of couple press conferences over Zoom over that. And it's going to be interesting to see not only who they hire for baseball ops, but I'm more interested in the GM because you have a president of baseball ops, I think it allows you to go a lot more directions with your general manager. But yeah, that stuff, coverage on that. And obviously it's a different off season because no GM meetings, no winter meetings. So it's like, you wonder how they're going to do that, but yeah, I'm going to Phoenix next week. And then going home to San Diego for Thanksgiving. So that'll be fun, but, there'll still be work to be done because the front office search is underway. So,
well, be well. You've been generous with your time. It's good to catch up. It's good. You know, we're doing these things, and even though you're hearing audio, we're doing these things via Zoom, so you can actually see my face. Do you know, I'm not that bad of a guy. I'm not as bad as the guy. All right? So, all right.
Man, you might be the most hated man on Twitter.
Hey, what are you going to do? It pays. It doesn't pay. Let's put it that way. So, but be well, my friend. We'll do this again, and take care. Happy Thanksgiving early.
Cool. Thanks. You too. Thanks for having me on.
And Justin Siscano, appreciate him joining us here, and at Justin C. Toscano on Twitter. So interesting stuff. All right, let's take a quick break, wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
The Talking Mets podcast is available on many outlets, but the most popular is Apple Podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Silva, the host of the Talking Mets podcast, and I encourage you to leave a review about the program on Apple. Just rate it 1 to 5 stars, hopefully a 5 because why wouldn't you? And then if you have time, leave a review. It helps the podcast continue to grow and encourages others to take a listen. You can also email me at MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Hope to hear from you soon. And enjoy the rest of the show. All right, final thoughts. I thought Justin Toscano did an awesome job there. Appreciate him coming on, and we'll be hearing more from him. One of my favorites there that covers the team. You know, really not much more to say as we wrap up here. I do think one last comment was when you hear about Luis Rojas, and I didn't get into that when I was talking about, you know, Bauer and the free agency and all that other stuff, but Rojas getting the personal points, managing the clubhouse, managing the media well, managing up to ownership, huge things that Mickey Callaway struggled with. I think Terry Collins struggled with at times, for sure, even though he was here a long time. I think the Mets haven't had a good manager in a long, long time, maybe since Bobby Valentine, and I know that Bobby was a polarizing figure. If the worst thing that you can talk about with him is that he needs to work on his in-game strategy, which it's basically bullpen. Lineups are collaborative with the front office, and I don't think lineups are as big of a deal in terms of winning and losing as people think. Maybe that's another topic for another day. It's managing the bullpen, knowing when to take a starter out, knowing when to push them, knowing how to read the game and getting the right guys warmed up, knowing your bullpen and who what, you know, roles are different now, but you know who's available, who you could push. It's very complicated. Like I said to Justin, easy and Stratomatic when you don't have people there. You could be the best bullpen management manager in the history of baseball, but Stratomatic, you've got everything in front of you, and you got the history from the prior season because you're doing a replay in that scenario. But that's not the way that real baseball works. So, interesting stuff from Justin Toscano. Jam-packed show, went longer than our normal hour. Hope you enjoyed it. We had a lot to get to. What's next? Well, there'll probably be a lot of news, and we'll be back to our weekly podcast on Sundays, provided that there hasn't been like breaking news. And I think we will have breaking news very shortly. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a new president of baseball operations next week and we are, you know, back at it. But anyway, I want to thank Justin Toscano, Justin C. Toscano. I can always mess up his, Twitter handle. I want to thank him. Check him out on Twitter at The Record. Of course, you can check me out all the time at Mike Silva Media on Twitter. TalkingMetsPodcast.com, where you get the show all the time. You get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. And if you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Be well, be safe. Till next time, take care, everybody.